You're listening to CKMS News on CKMS 102.7 FM in Waterloo, Ontario. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative Grant Program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access the recordings of the show on radiowaterloo.ca/news or on the National Local Journalism Initiative website, canada-info.ca. I'm your host, Shalaka Jadhav. Fitsum Argai is a Black activist and writer who grew up in Kitchener. He draws on years of experience as a community worker and advocate for youth rights and disability justice. Voted Waterloo Region's Best Local Writer in 2020, he has published in Canadian Dimension, the Waterloo Region Record, Briar Patch Magazine, the Community Edition, and Korea Exposé. His interests focus on human rights, misuses of power, and community development, connecting local stories to provincial, national, and global issues through reporting and analysis. Fitsum is also the co-founder and project director of Textile, a literary publication and writing mentorship program, which is where Fitsum and I happen to work together. As the pandemic has impacted workers across every and any industry, we together talk about the importance of upholding the complexity of local stories, finding a rhythm as a journalist during the pandemic, and of course, the launch of Inside Waterloo, an independent media initiative publishing investigative and personal stories of identity and belonging, which are not otherwise covered by traditional media in Waterloo Region. So before we dive into our conversation today, Fitsum, can you introduce yourself to our listeners and share a little bit about your journey coming into journalism?
My name is Fitsum Argai, and I have a background in community work. I come from sort of a youth work, independent facilitator background. Worked with the YMCA for a decade, City of Kitchener for 8 years in their community services department. I'm also a social scientist. I've studied in leisure studies at the University of Waterloo, and now am a master's student in the community psychology program at Laurier. My journey coming into journalism, that's a big question with sort of a complex answer. So a lot of my work over the last 3-4 years was very much as an organizer and activist. So was doing a lot of advocacy and work around racial justice and equity, particularly for African, Caribbean, and Black populations in the region of Waterloo. And so that work was with the African Caribbean Black Network of Waterloo Region, as well as with various groups that looked at that population here. And so I was involved with the planning and the running of the KW Solidarity March for Black Lives, which was Kitchener's version of the Black Lives Matter March that happened in the summer of 2020. And that really catapulted me into the sort of the stratosphere of media involvement. I was sort of inundated with interviews with journalists and newsrooms, was taking a lot of just sort of a crash course in media. Before that, I really, my foray into media had very much been me writing stories about various issues, whether that be community policing or issues of identity in the context of community development. I had written stories about that, about these issues, and pitched them to magazines and outlets, but had not worked as a journalist formally. Then the editor-in-chief of the Waterloo Region Record, sort of hearing about my role in the community, the relationships I had, the access to communities that his newsroom didn't have, and saw that I had those things and reflected the community, specifically the Black community, and asked me to come on to the Record using Local Journalism Initiative funding. I think the same funding you're hired under. So that was my start.
Yeah, it's definitely a meandering start, but I don't think there's any sort of traditional entry point into journalism either. I know for me, coming into this role at the radio station, I was nervous that I didn't come from a traditional journalism background. But I know I felt really excited about the storytelling opportunities that come with journalism. And that's something that I hear in your work as well. So there is this reputation with journalism that it needs to be unbiased in a way that can sometimes feel cold as well.
So how have you found a way to build relationality with the communities that you're reporting on and alongside? And what assumption of journalism did you need to challenge and navigate within that process of yours?
Yeah, lucky for me, I can sort of answer this question in a linear way. So the day that I started at The Record, sorry, the day before I started, that was July 5th. July 5th, 2020 is a Sunday. And that was the day that Abdusalam Omar, Black Somali man, was brutally arrested by Waterloo Regional Police Service officers. And I was getting texts from people who were there. I was following tweets from people who were there about what happened. And I actually broke that story to the newsroom. So they weren't aware of what had happened. I brought the story there, but it was my first day at The Record. So I couldn't cover the story because I didn't have orientation. Perhaps if I had come from journalism school, I could have hit the ground running more easily. But just simply like learning how to use their systems and how to file stories, I still needed to do all of that stuff. So it was another reporter who ended up taking that story on. And, you know, I'll sort of reemphasize again my background as a youth worker and community worker. Relationships are everything. There were relationships built over a decade, working in the communities in this region, specifically in Kitchener, where there are racialized communities and poor communities that I'm drawing from to help me do this work, because that's my experience. And so even as reporters from The Record and CBC and 570, like everybody flocked to that news item because it also was around the time of the marches and, you know, police use of force and the police, you know, the role of police in our communities was already under scrutiny. So this just became a huge news item. And oftentimes news items, even about crime, have a really short shelf life. This story lasted a week. And throughout that week, I was bombarded with requests to get Somali residents who witnessed the arrest to offer comments. And despite my best efforts, nobody wanted to talk to any reporters because they didn't know them. There was just no trust. And I totally understood that. So I was in this weird place where I was aware of and even involved in some efforts to address the harm and the trauma in that community, as well as the wider Black community. I couldn't divorce myself from those conversations, but then also trying to connect to people to get witness statements and comments for the story. Was able to connect, you know, the newsroom to someone named Fadumo Musa, who at the time was the president of the Somali Association. So they were able to get quotes that way. They got quotes from Laura May Lindo, but were lacking sort of the witness accounts. So when it came around to the time that I could, you know, start to pitch stories, I pitched the story of like witness accounts. I want to reconstruct what happened and actually talk to people who were there because they'll talk to me. And I got some pushback, but it was early on. And so they hadn't gotten sick of me yet. I had some ground to stand on because I had the access. That was literally the reason they brought me in. So even though it was a week on, after every other newsroom had moved on from the story, I stuck with it. So that weekend, I actually attended a community healing circle that was organized by some organizations with the Somali Association and Somali community leaders, and witnesses were there. And so it was an opportunity, and it was held over Zoom, for people to talk about their trauma, to talk about what had happened, to talk about the collective, you know, hurt and healing. And because I was there, introduced to people there, I had community leaders recognize me and agree to facilitate connections to witnesses who were there. In Waterloo region, Somali residents, and actually a lot of people in that area, in the Victoria Hills area, congregate and hang out in a parking lot at the corner of Victoria and Westmount. So I was invited to go to that, to that parking lot to talk to folks. I had community leaders take me to that parking lot late at night. Everybody gets there, like people get there staggered from like 6 to 8, but then like people will stay till like 2, 3 a.m. Like it's a spot, especially in the summer.
People play soccer, people pull up chairs. It's a community meeting spot. And I know a lot of the people there. But, and this sort of a long-winded answer to your question, even though I knew people who were witnesses there, or people who I had relationships with, even people who were youth, who I mentored as a youth worker, even though I had those pieces, I still did my due process because I was wearing a new hat as a reporter. So they knew me as the youth worker. I needed to approach them as a reporter and gain trust from people who are around the people that I know there. So they know that I'm doing my due process. And so that helped me do this in a good way. And I spent 3 days talking to witnesses at that parking lot from like 8 to 12, like at night, just corroborating witness statements, making sure accounts were lining up. That helped me get a really accurate idea of what had happened. But I did it in this very careful, intentional way. That is not the way that reporters tell stories. If I were to think back on it now, I probably wouldn't have put in that much energy and time because it took a lot out of me. It took a lot out of me to hear about what had happened to Mr. Omer because that could have been me. So I had my own trauma that I was dealing with. But it also was a really life-giving thing that, you know, in the reporting of that story, it gave me an opportunity to practice everything that I'd learned and apply that to news. And it turned out to be probably my strongest story. You know, that moment aside, there have been other examples of where my relationships from my past work allowed me, gave me access to stories or communities that other reporters didn't have. But I think the longer I was there, I'm a really critical person. I like to write analysis and to really dig into stories. And when you're doing daily reporting, not every story can be that. Sometimes you just gotta write the story and get it done. That really is hard for me because I part of digging into stories is also honoring relationships with people and with communities. And so there was just an ongoing struggle while I was working at The Record, which is a daily, to honor that relationality, as you say, but then also, you know, do my job as a daily reporter. So it was a tension for sure.
I caught what you said there about doing things in a good way. And so I'm curious too about that sort of like turning point, right? So when did you maybe start to feel like a journalist?
That's a good question. I don't know if I ever actually started to feel like a journalist. And maybe it's because I have a better idea of what a reporter or journalist is. So I think it's important to differentiate like someone who's a daily reporter and somebody who, you know, is a journalist that maybe writes analysis. I think that's a really important distinction. And also people often conflate columnists with reporters, and those are different roles too. There are people who are paid to give opinions and analysis and people who are paid to just report. And I think by virtue of starting at The Record and learning, like, you know, getting that, like I said earlier, crash course on reporting and journalism, it made me realize what reporting is and who reporters are. And it made me realize that I don't see myself as a traditional reporter. And I'm really okay with that because there are lots of problems in the way that we think about reporting and journalism and the sort of idealism of objectivity and how journalists and reporters move through communities and report on them have directly contributed to upholding status quo and making it very, very difficult for communities to achieve equity and to increase access to, you know, XYZ or decrease barriers. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there was a moment. I mean, I definitely learned how to report, and I also want to just take a step and a beat to say, like, I have a lot of respect for reporters. I think it takes a real skill to take a really complex thing, like let's say city budgets, and to make that into, you know, a piece that people are going to read and understand. So there's explanatory work that is, you know, The Record has like fantastic reporters and you know, other outlets as well. I'm somebody who I'm definitely, how can I put it? I'm a ruminator of sorts. You know, I like to take my time with things. Of course, I can move quickly. Like if there's a news item, you know, if there's a story that's happening and it's breaking news, like, okay, let's go, go, go. I love that energy and can definitely do that. But I think my preferred approach is one that daily reporters aren't doing. Because it's by virtue of the job that they have to do. They don't work in a system that allows for that sort of careful, intentional work. Because it's a daily paper. You got to fill the paper up. So these are all things that I've learned and helped me see where I am in relation to reporting.
Yeah, and I know you sort of chatted a little bit about, you know, how local journalism to some extent does rely on that relationship building. So how do you do that work while upholding your own boundaries? And how do you hold that space to process these stories that you work alongside in your reporting?
Well, I think it's complicated. So there are relationships with community members, there's relationships with institutions. Something that I found really, really early on was, you know, it was clear from the beginning who I was. There's no hiding it. I'm an activist. My position on policing and carcerality was well known going into that job. So my critiques were well known, and there was times where I needed, you know, a quote or a comment from the police that was just difficult for me to get. There was another reporter at the Record, someone who worked the crime beat for a long time, and most reporters cut their teeth on the crime beat. That's a whole issue that I'm not even going to get into here. But there was one reporter in particular who had that relationship, not just with cops, but with Crown attorneys and the courts, and they knew the back doors. I didn't have any of that. If I'd reach out, I'd get snippets, just scraps from the police. You know, as a reporter, you cover a certain area. Let's say it's healthcare. You build relationships with people in that sector. You know, if it's community development, if it's politics. There were some reporters who covered municipal politics, and because they know the counselors and they know the people at the city hall, they're able to get stories that other people can't get as easily. So of course, relationships are really, really important. But I think where it gets complicated for me is the relationships with marginalized or racialized communities, the ones who feel like they're not being well represented in the media. They don't trust reporters. They don't trust newsrooms. And so how do you rebuild that trust? I think it looks like reconceptualizing the role of journalism and journalists telling stories in these communities. I think it also looks like looking outside of current models of mainstream journalism and telling stories in really intentional ways. Another really important way that I try and build relationships through reporting and journalism is by checking in with folks about what they've shared with me. That sometimes looks like showing people your notes as you're writing them down and quoting them. And other times it means sending people their quotes via email. And these are all things that reporters can do and editors say, you know, is an option. But there is a sense that that sort of slows things down. It'd be preferable just to get the quote and tell the story. I'm very much in the camp of, especially depending on the story. So let's say I'm interviewing an immigrant family, a Syrian immigrant family, about their experiences, 10 years later after having come here, or 7 years later rather. I'll want to show them their quotes to say, does this fully reflect what you'd shared with me? And to maybe even do that with someone who can speak and read Arabic and English and are able to translate that to folks. That sort of process just takes way more time than a daily newspaper can offer for a quick news item. So that's more of a feature, and not every story can be a feature. And that's tough. That's tough, especially if these are the sorts of stories that you want to focus on, as I do. That's partially why I've launched Inside Waterloo.
Yeah, so let's get into that. So where is that line between local media and independent media, and how do you see them walking alongside together? And can you share a little bit about what Inside Waterloo hopes to do?
So Inside Waterloo is a new indie media initiative looking to amplify the stories and experiences of Black, Indigenous, and racialized residents living in Waterloo region. Through investigative and personal stories, long form essays, podcasts, visual stories, its goal is to cover a side of Waterloo region that is often ignored in traditional media. You know, if you want to look at a sort of a corollary, I think of Briar Patch as a sort of model that I'd love to emulate with Inside Waterloo. You'll see art and you'll see in-depth analysis on issues. It's inherently political. We did sort of market research with this. So we're getting support from Indigraph. I should say that as well. Indigraph is a independent news media incubator that has funding from Google News and Facebook News. So that's a bit of a, you know, they're big tech, and big tech has done a lot of really not great things to, you know, to journalism here. So that's a tension, but, it also is just building the infrastructure for so many independent news media outlets, and really making it possible to tell news digitally as well as through various formats. And so that sort of thing doesn't really exist. That sort of focus on Black, Indigenous, and racialized communities, which do exist in our region, but just don't have the same sort of focus. And if you're thinking about it through an equity lens, you should be focusing on these communities. And so, yeah, it'll be stories told by these communities. It can be also about these communities. We'll invite pitches from freelancers, from any freelancer, and we'll have conversations with people about their piece and whether it works or doesn't work. Also do call outs for issues that we know exist, like housing. Housing's a big topic in town here, right? I'm really curious about homeless populations in tent cities, and the reporting I've seen on you know, tent cities in Cambridge, it's all sort of the same. And I'd really like to dig in, into these communities, into these encampments, and actually talk to people about their experiences. So often we don't actually hear from people who are living in tent cities. And I think there are ways to do that in ethical ways, but you don't often get the time to do that as a daily reporter. And we will get that time to do that through Inside Waterloo. It's I think that any healthy democratic place, city, community needs all sorts of angles into stories, and a healthy news media ecosystem has independent news. Toronto has independent news. Montreal, Vancouver, New York, like you can name any big city. Even in not big cities, like where there's just great independent news. I mean, people are better informed about issues by virtue of having all of these various ways of getting news. And if the only news you're getting is from sort of mainstream sources, then you're sort of getting one, you're getting the side of the story that will favor whoever can get comments out first. So let's take the police, for example. They have a communications department. If there's a situation, an arrest or a crime that needs to be reported on, the police are ready to give comments. The people who are not ready to give comments are people who are witnesses, people who are victims. They're often traumatized, so they're giving really heightened responses, which is also great for news stories, like the comments that you can get from people who are in that state. I don't know if many reporters will sort of admit to that, but it's true that you're going to get really, really good comments if you can get access to people who are impacted, you know, at a crash site or, you know, at a house that's just burned down. Inside Waterloo, I mean, it's really, I keep coming back to this quote. I don't even know, I'm going to take credit for it, but I'm sure someone else said it. It's not so much about getting a place at the table as it is about creating your own tables. So I think there's this like this sort of, I don't want to say myth, but there's this thing that people feel like is so necessary for news, and they say that's representation. We just need more people who look like communities in these newsrooms. And I think we're seeing that fail over and over and over again. And so I'm very much tied to the idea of supporting and encouraging more independent news outside of these systems that very much are monolithic, you know, institutions that are dominated by a certain racial spatial dynamic and have a certain sort of power. we should think about building things outside of those. And you'd hope to see newsrooms support that work as well, because it should all be cohesive. Unfortunately, something I also learned about journalism that I didn't know prior to going into it is how competitive it is. Very, very competitive. Probably more so in Toronto than it is in Waterloo region, but I got a sense of that competition even within newsrooms. I'm a heavy Scorpio. I love confrontation. And I love competition. I'm the oldest sibling. You know, I will race to get stories. I love putting stories up against other people's. And I try and keep that as healthy as possible. But journalism very much like amplified that part of me. And stepping outside of mainstream has like helped me think, or sort of look back at that time and think, oh man, maybe that wasn't as healthy as it could have been. So I don't know. I hope mainstream news media don't see, you know, independent media or Inside Waterloo more specifically as competition, but as part of an ecosystem that will just raise journalism up. Yeah, that's a long-winded answer.
No, it's great. And I'm sure folks are excited for this new sort of wave or opportunity for media in the region, especially as the region grows. Like, it's important, as you said, to build out that infrastructure proportionately. Yeah. And so how are you hoping to navigate these gaps that you've noticed as a journalist through your role at Inside Waterloo? And what experiences are shaping this kind of work?
Yeah, so with Inside Waterloo, I feel like I'm going to have the chance to continue what I started at the Record. So my contract at the Record was supposed to be from June of 2020 to March 2021. I had terminated my contract early in January of 2021 because it's federal funding, and what I was told was, the federal funding comes with certain strings and red tape that makes it really difficult to adjust the contract. And I wanted to adjust the contract because I'm still a grad student. I'm still doing my master's, trying to finish my thesis. And so I wanted to reduce my hours down to part-time and not do full-time. But they weren't able to do it. So I terminated my contract early. And I don't feel like I left contentiously. I still keep a lot of connections to people there, that I value. But I definitely feel like I wasn't able to finish what I started there. So there are stories that I wanted to keep digging into. There was a growth that I saw happen that I want to continue to invest in. I thought about journalism as like a late life career switch. I didn't think about it happening so quickly. So in that sense, the LJI program has been a real benefit. It's also thrown a wrench into all my plans, right? And created new opportunities that I didn't see possible before. So I'm happy that I can sort of continue to grow as a journalist through Inside Waterloo. I'm happy that I can take some of the skills that I have in other work that I do, such as with textile or in my past as a youth worker, to encourage and foster the stories of people in my community. So that's really exciting. And yeah, that's really what I hope to do. And I hope to also inspire other people who are thinking about journalism or thinking about supporting journalism to, you know, to invest time and energy and resources into journalism in our region. Whether that be mainstream or independent, I think that we should be supporting it all. So I hope that the stories will sort of help people see the benefit in that.
And so how would you invite listeners to engage with the work of Inside Waterloo?
I would invite listeners to subscribe to our newsletter. So we're going to be sharing stories through a newsletter campaign. We're running a campaign to build subscriptions and to invite people to be founding members of Inside Waterloo. So subscribe to the newsletter to read the stories that we're developing and to see the things that we're sharing about our community. As we start to build this out into a bigger thing. So yeah, this is super early stages for Inside Waterloo, and it's an exciting thing to see grow and develop if you are in the region or even outside of the region. So you can check out Inside Waterloo at insidewaterloo.ca. And all of the information is right there.
And so what are your hopes for how reporting in this region will look over the next few years? And what are you excited to see?
I think that the pandemic is going to lead to some really serious burnout among reporters. You know, I had mentioned earlier that I have a ton of respect for daily reporters and people who are able to pump out stories, you know, every day. Like, that is amazing to me. And it takes a really high, you know, it takes a lot of skill to be able to do that. Reporters have been doing that about the pandemic from day one in a country and in a province where that's not very easy to do, where the rules keep changing and the targets keep moving. Reporters have been, you know, really, really struggling and doing the best job that they can to cover the pandemic. So I forecast some serious burnout and people are going to need time off. And I think, I really hope that newsrooms support that. I'm sort of seeing the end of the pandemic. But I do think that the pandemic has completely changed how journalism happens. I mean, newsrooms are shutting down their physical offices. Everything is moving virtual. Home and work have collapsed in really unhealthy ways for many people. And so boundaries have needed to be set. It also has made it very difficult to go back to that earlier point about relationship building. It is hard to connect to people when you're wearing a mask, you know? And so that, you know, that can be very difficult especially when you're reporting on vulnerable communities. You don't want to increase harm to these communities, but you also don't want to leave them out of the news. So that's a real tension that I had to navigate while I was at the Record. The last story that I published was actually about Nadine Green. Nadine Green was a woman, a Black woman who owned a convenience store in downtown Kitchener, who was evicted from her store because she was using it as a space for mutual aid and support for homeless and street-involved people. She has continued that work that she started in that convenience store in her role at Lot 42, and goes out on nightly runs to deliver food and supplies to people on the streets. I went on one of those runs with her, and I masked up. I was with a photographer who took photos, but I could not help but think that this is how community spread happens. So, you know, it was a really tough thing for me to come along on that trip, because it gave me really important insight, but it increased certain risks. And so that's a tension that all throughout the pandemic, I'm sure that reporters have had to deal with. And I certainly did as well. I'm excited to see more students come into our region. So Waterloo region is very much like a student town. People like to talk about it as a student town anyways, with the two universities and the college here in the region. And Conestoga has a journalism program, and Laurier has, you know, a journalism program. So I'm excited to see more students decide to stay here and to want to tell stories here and to report on things happening here and to see maybe inside Waterloo as an example of something that they can get involved in or also even do. I hope Inside Waterloo inspires students in both the Conestoga and Laurier journalism programs to, you know, think about reporting on things that are happening here. Waterloo region is one of the fastest growing municipalities in Ontario. And there's lots of things happening that are going to require some in-depth reporting, some investigative journalism, some analysis. So I hope that people, and even people who are outside of journalism, you know, like myself, who come from different backgrounds, work experiences and life experiences, to envision and to sort of see how their experiences can feed into journalistic endeavors. And those are my main hopes. I also wanted to, I've got like five like really big stories that I really want to tell before the end of the year, like some investigative stories. And I'm sure that I'm going to be able to. I just feel like they're stories that might cause big waves. And so I'm looking forward to doing that.
Check out the archive versions of this program and other episodes on radiowaterloo.ca/news and follow us on Twitter at Radio Waterloo. You can email news@radiowaterloo.ca to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover.